COVID crisis is affecting every generation, but that also includes young adults. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, our Young Voters Roundtable checks back in with us with their thoughts about the pandemic and the fall election. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, all hail the return of the Riverside Arts Market this weekend, at least the virtual one. We'll tell you about it. But first this morning, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports 42,402 cases and 1,827 deaths. Statewide deaths from COVID-19 jumped by 48 for the second consecutive day, with more than 40 new recorded fatalities from the pandemic. In Northeast Florida, we have 1,946 reported cases and 64 deaths. Three of the state's new recorded deaths were in Duval County, two men aged 70 and 91, and a 70-year-old woman. Well, back in March, we spoke with a group of young voters just before the pandemic hit to get their thoughts about the presidential candidates and several key issues in that race. This is a group that has come of age under storm clouds of war, recession, mass shootings, wildfires, and climate change, and now a pandemic. Given everything going on and everything that's changed since they were last with us, we thought it would be a good time to check back in with them. It's our Young Voters Roundtable. As we welcome Marissa, she's 20, no party affiliation, a junior at UNF with a double major in political science and communication. Hi, Marissa.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us. Also here today, Sarah. She's 22, a Democrat, a UNF alum, and also a station volunteer. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. And rounding out our Young Voters Roundtable, Adam. He's 20, a Republican, and president of the College Republicans at JU. Hi, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's good to have our young voters with us. Think of them as Gen Z. They are not millennials. They are the next generation coming up. What are your questions for them? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Marissa, let's begin with you. You're a junior at UNF, 20 years old. How is the pandemic affecting you and your household?
Well, the pandemic has definitely taken a toll on everyone, me included. Obviously, school has been canceled. So that's been kind of hard. Everything's kind of been put to a stop. But for me personally, my dad works in healthcare, so he's been traveling a lot. And my household has definitely been a little bit crazy these past couple of weeks.
How so?
My dad is a respiratory therapist because he's traveling to, he went to North Carolina and Orlando. He's working in nursing homes trying to help the elderly. So we've kind of been sheltering at home to prevent the spread of disease. Haven't been positive yet, so hopefully that stays in the clear. But yeah, it's just been a little bit hectic.
Are you worried at all that he might, by the nature of his work, contract COVID?
Of course.
And what precautions does he take there?
So when he goes to the nursing home, he is fully suited up. He's been tested twice, and they've both been negative. He's distancing at home, wearing masks, washing hands, keeping away from everybody and not really leaving the house that much unless it's necessary.
It's 549-2937. Are you a young voter out there, a young adult? We especially want to hear from you today. Give us a call. Adam, let's go to you. You are the president of the College Republicans on the campus at JU. Of course, that campus is shut down right now as well. What's it been like for you and attending college virtually?
It's definitely been a struggle. There's been a lot of online learning that has had to be brought up to not only us as students, but as the teachers as well. My professors have had to have the learning curve with the online learning, with the virtual sessions that they've been having. We've had to change the way that we interact, and we've had to change the way that we learn.
What's been the biggest change, would you say? What's been the biggest challenge?
Definitely not having a professor there immediately to answer the questions that you have. And of course, there have been some hiccups with technology, as there always are. But I think all in all, Jacksonville University has done a fantastic job with adapting as quickly as possible.
That's good to hear. Let's go to Sarah now, recently graduated from UNF. You're 22 years old, trying to get a job, like your whole generation is, your first real job, I guess, in the middle of a pandemic. We are looking at new unemployment claims in the state, 221,000 for the week ending May 9th. The national claims figure, of course, is higher than it's been since the Great Depression. So, Sarah, as you graduate from college and you're out there job hunting, gosh, I mean, it's the worst possible timing for someone just starting their career. What, when you talk to your friends about this, what do you guys talk about? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely something that none of us were expecting.
Right.
I didn't expect to graduate into a climate like this, but I mean, I've just been job searching the same way I would regardless. I've been trying to network. We've all, you know, had to file for unemployment and deal with the unemployment system. But I mean, you know, just trying to keep my head up and keep things as normal as possible. Some places it seems like are starting to hire again. I've been getting a lot more emails back recently. So it seems like maybe things are getting back to normal. But I mean, we'll see if there's a second wave of this.
Right. How about you, Marissa? You haven't graduated yet, but you will be soon.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm currently unemployed right now. I used to work at the university, but since we are no longer in school, that's an issue. I've been looking at jobs for over the summer with hopes of us returning back to school in the fall. But again, everything is so uncertain. So I guess just like Sarah said, apply for jobs, keep your head up, and just carry on as if everything was normal, even though unfortunately it's not.
Yeah, it's 549-2937 as we talk with our Young Voters Roundtable today, a Republican, a Democrat, and an Independent. As we look at the special challenges facing Generation Z, the newest crop of young adults coming of age in this pandemic, they've grown up in the shadow of September 11th. School shootings, the specter of climate change, and more. I want to play this spot for you guys right now. It's this new national spot airing on iHeartRadio. It's called Don't Stop. Here's a little of the music from it.
Don't stop talking to me. Stop, don't stop laughing about it. Stop, don't stop, don't stop. Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop.
Okay, and so this spot is geared at teens and young adults. When you look at the video component for it, it shows teenagers and young adults still engaging in lots of activities, even though we're all having to socially distance, wear masks, stay at home. This spot was produced by Brunette Garcia Advertising here in Jacksonville, and the message is to just keep doing positive things in the pandemic. Here's VP Eduardo Sarmiento.
So the idea of the campaign is to tell people that they don't have to stop creating, singing, dancing, connecting with loved ones. The only thing they need to stop is the spread of COVID. So please stay at home.
Adam, what's your reaction to that?
I absolutely think that the positive outlook on life is the best way to handle the COVID pandemic. I think while we need to change the way that we act, the things that we do, I don't think we need to change who we are as a person. I don't think we need to stop being people with personalities. I don't think we need to stop having fun. Obviously, it's important to minimize the spread of the disease, but as far as changing our lives, other than to just stop spreading the disease, I don't think we need to do that.
Yeah. What about you, Sarah? It's a positive, uplifting message. We certainly need all of that that we can get right now. But I would think particularly for young adults, this has been hard. I mean, if you're 40, 50 plus, staying home all of the time, it's not great, but it's doable. If you're a young adult, you want to go out, you want to have fun. That's what people your age do. So how hard has this been for you guys?
For me, it was a really big change in the beginning. I'm usually a pretty busy person. I had a busy school schedule, work schedule. I was going all the time before all this started. So switching to being home all the time, it was hard at first. It was easy to get into just like a rut and, you know, feel suffocated being at home all the time. But I agree with the message of like, we need to keep creating. We need to keep connecting with each other. If you're just, you know, sitting in it and thinking about how hard it is to be at home, I don't know, you're going to put yourself in a bad place. So I agree. We all need to keep interacting with each other the way we normally would, just at a safe distance or through the computer.
It's 549-2937 to connect with our Young Voters Roundtable. I want to move on and talk politics with you guys right now, because this November, really for the first time, when you look at the demographics of this country, the new generations will have enough electoral clout to seriously compete with the old, the boomers and the surviving silent generation voters and even some Gen Xers. But I know that for many people in your age cohort, you feel disillusioned. When you look at the polls on the Democratic side, most millennial and Gen Z voters, people aged 18 to 39, supported Bernie Sanders of Vermont or perhaps Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. Very few of you were enthusiastic about former Vice President Joe Biden. On the Republican side, there's strong support for President Trump, but not as much as there is among older voters. Some young Republicans, according to the polling anyway, may not vote. Okay, so I'd like to begin with our independent voter, Marissa. In this election, young voters could make a decisive impact if they turn out. That's always the variable for young voters in any election. Will they turn out? When you talk politics with your friends, particularly after this COVID pandemic has had such an impact, what do you discuss and where are you with politics right now?
Right. So I completely agree with everything you're saying, and it's hard nowadays. Right now, everything is uncertain for me like it was last time, especially now because we have this pandemic that we're dealing with. So when talking with friends, it's always like, how is the situation being dealt now? And obviously the current president is under a tremendous amount of stress. So although he might not be handling the best way possible, he is handling things. And I think that's really important to consider. Again, I'm still up in the air. This pandemic has made everything really confusing, but I am paying close attention to both sides to see what they are going to do in the future and what they're doing now to help slow the spread.
So you haven't decided who will get your vote. Is that right?
No, ma'am, I have not.
Still haven't decided. Let's go to our Democrats. Sarah, I'm assuming you will vote for Joe Biden.
I will be voting for Joe Biden. He certainly was not my first choice. I think the whole
Who
timing
was your first choice?
Was unfortunate because I do feel like it might have impacted the end of Bernie's campaign. I feel like it might have impacted
Sanders supporter. Okay. Yeah. So you wanted Bernie Sanders then, right?
Yes, ma'am. He would have been my choice. And but I do want to emphasize, though, you mentioned before the voter turnout. I have heard a lot of people my age saying that they won't be voting because of who the choices have come down to. And I want to emphasize how important it is to still vote regardless of whether you feel like you wouldn't have picked the two choices that we have.
What do you think, Adam? You're president of the College Republicans on the JU campus. Will you support President Trump for reelection? And will your fellow Republicans of your age? What do you think?
Absolutely. I would support President Trump in his second term. And along with my fellow constituents and college Republicans. And Sarah, I completely agree with you in saying that it doesn't, as much as I want President Trump to win, it's very, very important that young voters vote. Just showing up is one of the most important things that any American can do. It's the way that Americans can get their voice out and get their voice heard.
Now, all three of you, I think, are fairly politically engaged, but when you study this, you're in the minority among your age group. How challenging is it to get your fellow Gen Zers to dial into politics and to turn out to vote? Adam.
Well, definitely, especially being on a liberal campus, as far as my college goes, we have somewhat of an issue trying to get more people to come out. We do a lot with local politicians, with state politicians, and even if we can get experts on the national level, we do our best. As college Republicans as a whole, we, as a state board, we get a lot of big, big, big names. Last week, we were on the phone with Tommy Hicks Jr., the co-chair of the RNC, and John Pence, the leader or the president of the campaign.
Of the Trump campaign, you mean? Yeah. Yes. JU does do a great job, particularly through Rick Mullaney and his Public Policy Institute, of bringing political heavyweights to campus, UNF as well. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with our Young Voters Roundtable. This is a relatively new feature we have here on the show. Generation Z, not millennials, younger voters, people just getting out of college or just starting their careers, coming of age in this pandemic. What are your thoughts about that, and what are your questions for them? 549-2937. Let's go to Jack. He's in Intercoastal West. Hi, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I just wanted to comment on a question. I just wanted to say I'm about to turn 18 the end of the month, and I've spent the past few years kind of being excited about the fact that I'm be able to vote in this election, but honestly, looking at the choices, I've been getting pretty close to the fact that I might just go and vote only down the ballot.
And so you're not happy with either major candidate. Why is that? Why are you unhappy with them?
It feels like just more of the same, and the same hasn't really worked. You've either had people who have been ineffectual or people who have been around too long to realize where their problems are at. But my question would be, I know that there's been a lot of talk about young voters not being as engaged. I know I've been doing work in my high school to try to get my classmates engaged in like government and politics. What are the people on the round table?
Yeah, I want to ask them that too. But first, let me ask you, Jack, who would have been on the ballot that would have got you excited about voting?
That's a hard thing to say, because it wasn't there wasn't too much that excited me.
And let me just jump in. I want to challenge you a little bit and throw back at you what your fellow Gen Zers are saying here on their roundtable, that you should vote even if you're not excited. It's your civic duty to vote. What about that?
Oh, I agree. It's my civic duty, though. That's why I just, at least with the presidential race, it kind of hurts to see myself voting for either person. And I would completely go and vote for every other thing, especially that sales tax referendum. But it kind of hurts. It makes me hurt at some points to think about voting for Joe Biden. And it hurts for me at some points to think about voting for Donald Trump.
And can you explain why for both of them?
Joe Biden, this idea of he's very much... he's very much this old guard who I don't think has been self-reflective enough to realize where he has gone wrong, and he has held steadfastly to a lot of poor choices like the Iraq War, or his kind of double standard that he kind of came with Supreme Court nominees. Like, I think that he has not had the self-reflectiveness that some people have had for what their past mistakes, and I think Trump's bungled a lot of the coronavirus response, and I don't think that he's run the country as effectively as a lot of people hope that he would have.
Okay. Jack, I appreciate the call. Thanks for that. Let's go to our independent voter, Marissa. How do his comments land with you?
Yeah, I mean,
In my opinion, since I am independent, you know, I can go either way. I look more at the politics rather than the person, and I don't say, like, Trump did this because he's this person or vice versa with Joe Biden. I look at what their policies are saying and what, you know, the laws that they're creating and what they're doing for the country as a whole rather than just this person because, you know, they said something negative or they did something negative. So if I were to give you any advice because you're unhappy about the candidates, just look at the politics and what ideas align closely with yours rather than the person.
Okay. John in St. John's County. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Quick question for the young voters here, specifically on the call. Could you go over your top 3 to 5 decision criteria? And I'll give you an example. Business regulation, taxes, healthcare, and guns.
Are those your big issues, John?
Not necessarily mine, but I think it's important for young people taking positions to be able to justify their position and actually communicate what matters to them.
Okay, let's go to Sarah, then Adam. Sarah, what are the biggest issues motivating you in this election? Do we have Sarah? Go ahead, Sarah.
I'm here. Well, so a lot of social issues are very important to me. The caller mentioned guns. I do think that that's a big one. Healthcare, certainly. But a lot of things like supporting, have they supported marriage equality in the past? How do they conduct themselves in the media? I know that what Marissa was saying about focusing on their politics and not on the person, but I do think that given our current situation, it is important to look at how the candidate conducts themselves, how they operate with other people, how they handle themselves in debates, because I do think having a president that can speak well, that can work with other people is something that we need.
Adam, how about you?
So I've got quite a few points that would give me more confidence in Donald Trump being a better president. And along with following the Republican Party, what it really boils down to is people. People are the most important thing, and I believe in the rights of everybody. Of course, the Second Amendment, as somebody who isn't a gun owner, I still believe that everybody should have the right to bear arms, whether, you know, you're a police officer or a 23-year-old mother or a 89-year-old man. Doesn't matter who you are. I'm also a business owner, and the Republican agenda is much more aligned with being a business owner and wanting taxes lower.
Hey, Adam, I have an email for you here from Marilyn. She says, what about Justin Amash, the Libertarian candidate for president? He will take votes from Trump by young Republicans. Do you have any friends who plan to vote for Justin Amash in the fall?
I have some friends that have considered it. However, reality is I don't think he'll be able to get enough votes to be considered.
Okay. You don't think he'll take that many votes. Okay. Let's take one more call for our Young Voters Roundtable now. It's Greg on the north side. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing, Melissa?
Good, thanks. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
All right. I have a question. I'm a last of the baby boomers, and I find it hard to get younger people to get motivated to vote. So my question to your panel is, how can I, as a baby boomer, help to get the younger generations to get motivated to voting?
Okay, let's close with our independent voter, Marissa. What would juice youth turnout, Marissa? How can the boomers out there get you guys to the polls?
I think that's a really hard thing to tackle. I mean, even young people trying to get our peers to vote is hard. I would say to educate the youth voters, try to get them involved a little bit more. And I know sometimes boomers can be a little hard about their political views, so I guess try to stay open-minded and encourage them that it is their right to vote and that they should be doing it no matter what.
I want to thank all three of you for your engagement, and I wish you the best of luck. Adam, Sarah, and Marissa, our Young Voters Roundtable. Guys, thanks so much. Stay safe. We'll connect with you again in a few months, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.
And much more still ahead on the show later. We're going to drop in on Bri the Sports Guy. It's a local father and son podcast with some special magic. You're going to love this. That's later. But up next.
It's, you know, been kind of a slow but crushing demise to local print media.
A conversation with Void editor Matt Shaw about the future of local print media. Don't go away.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
The Voidcast from WJCT and Void Magazine is a Northeast Florida musical journey into the Allman Brothers Band's formative period in Jacksonville.
It was just like, you know, I'm hearing this magic being born.
The bedrooms where locals are making pop music in isolation.
I play everything on this keyboard.
Northeast Florida's hip-hop scene, where women and queer people are claiming their space.
We kind of were tokenized to kind of be like the openers.
Hear it at wjct.org/voidcast, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, after decades on the First Coast, local alt weekly Folio stopped publication this month. It was a huge loss for our Northeast Florida media landscape. Print publications everywhere are undergoing real challenges. They were doing that anyway, and the pandemic has only made this terrain tougher. But some, like Void Live, are getting creative so they can keep on keeping on. I spoke about it with editor Matt Shaw. Matt, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Melissa.
Let's talk about the state of local media. It was sad to see Folio Weekly go out of business this month after some 25 years almost of publication in our area. You used to be an editor at Folio. You're now the editor at Void. You have some insight on some of the challenges local publications are facing. What are your thoughts about all of this right now?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think a lot of people here who grew up with Folio Weekly, I think it was actually 33 years they celebrated
this
year.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was sort of my first introduction to that style of like alt weekly writing, where the voices were, you really heard the voices of the writers, and the photos were great. You know, they had Walter Coker, who's a very fantastic photojournalist, there for 20 something years, and it was really just such an important voice in the community, and to lose them, you know, as thin as the magazine might have become and the distribution was lower than it had ever been, it's still, you know, it was a weekly platform, and, you know, we're losing all of those stories and all of those voices on a weekly basis. So it was sad to see.
It is sad. Now, even before the pandemic, local print publications especially, and even broadcast ones, have been challenged by a lot of factors, including Facebook and their algorithms and their revenue model, right?
I mean, yeah, it's you know, been kind of a slow but crushing demise to local print media. Without, you know, people share articles. People don't really visit websites anymore. They share articles via Facebook, and then when you as a publication are trying to get your articles out there, you have to, you know, Facebook's kind of the middle person in all of this, and the algorithms that they use have really hurt the engagement that local publications get. And then they have sucked the advertising revenue dry because you have to, you know, as a publication, you have to pay to get more engagement on Facebook. So if you don't have people visiting your website and the only way they see it is through Facebook, you have to pay when they've, you know, Facebook's already taken away your ad revenue. So
yeah,
it's tough.
How is that leaving you over at Void Live?
I think Void being a monthly and just with the product that we've been putting out for 10 years, you know, a glossy magazine that's well-designed and visually pleasing with good writing and good stories, we have kind of been somewhat immune to a lot of those effects because we have a nice print product that, you know, we have 91,000 audited readers every month. And so leading up to this pandemic, we were in a good spot, you know, even though making a magazine is in effect a revenue neutral operation, you know, there's enough money to pay some salaries and pay all our contributors and put a nice product out, but there's not profit at the end of the day. But with this pandemic, 90% of our advertisers are in the food and beverage and retail sectors, and they were all closed for 6 weeks. And so we've lost, you know, I would say of those 90%, we've lost pretty much close to 100% of those advertisers have pulled out. And so, yeah, we're in a tough spot.
That's not good. So we don't know what the future holds for local independent publications. And let me just show my bias right now when I say I think they're so important to every community in this country. And we've got to do whatever we can to support them, including you at Void. You are launching a fundraiser to get back to print and reaching out directly to your readers. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, absent any advertiser revenue, or we still have some advertisers that have stayed on. We're very thankful for that. But to get back to print, you know, it's cost prohibitive to do that without some revenue and advertiser support. So we're reaching out to our readers, you know, to help us prove the concept of Void Magazine. You know, if you're one of those 91,000 readers, we've got some ways to support, you know, starting with, you know, direct donations, whatever you have, up to we have some perks, like starting with a $20 subscriber perk all the way up to a $2,000 local legend package, which you get a lot of cool Void merchandise and some of the other things that we've been doing for the community, such as the Void on Vinyl all local music compilation that we've done. So we've got an Indiegogo campaign that we launched this morning, and so we're hoping that our readers will support us and help us get back to print. And our goal is to raise $30,000, which is not, you know, is not the cost of actually printing the magazine. It's much lower. But we think with readers subsidizing this push that we can get back to print in July.
July. Okay. Well, check it out at Indiegogo. Search Viva La Void. And, you know, if print long-term isn't an option, will Void just go all digital?
I think, I'm not sure if that's an option. I mean, we really, really love print. And it's, you know, as we discussed earlier with all the competition out there, you know, when you're digital, you're competing with national and international publications. And people seem to be more interested in national news on the web. But when you put something out in print locally, you know, that reader engagement's there. It's a platform for locals. That's sort of the bet that we've made, is to prioritize local stories and local music and local arts. And it just doesn't it doesn't necessarily work digitally. So
again, support Void.
We'd like to continue printing.
You'd like to continue printing. So support that at Indiegogo's Viva La Void campaign. Just search it there. He's editor Matt Shaw. Thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, here's some good news. Riverside Arts Market, or RAM, is back, virtually at least. Now, of course, RAM had to close in March due to the coronavirus crisis, but they are launching an online market this Saturday at 8 a.m. with more than 90 local vendors. John Silvera of RAM is on the line now with more. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Good to talk to you. And RAM is just a wonderful local institution, of course, every Saturday under the Fuller Warren Bridge. We miss it, like we miss so many things. But you're coming back this weekend. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so of course, we're very excited to launch our online market. It will be through our Facebook page. There'll be an event on there. Currently, we have over 90 of our makers that are within the group, and they're busy working on getting their albums together. So the show, if you will be from 8 to 3. We plan on continuing that show every Saturday from 8 to 3. The hours might change a little bit, but as a consumer, you'll be able to go to the Facebook event and make a comment on a post and a product, and that'll put you right in touch with the maker, and you'll be able to work out the payment details and the shipping. And a lot of our makers are offering free deliveries in the Jacksonville area, and even contact deliveries or contactless deliveries. So we're excited about the potential. And, of course, all of our makers are struggling right now with not only the closure of RAM, but a lot of the other outdoor venues that they sell their art at.
Are these some of the same vendors we would have seen if we'd come out to the physical RAM, or have you added some new ones too?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's just the existing. We have had some interest from other businesses once they heard about the Facebook event. But we are just drawing from our 2020 approved makers at the Riverside Arts Market, and we'll continue to evaluate adding new makers into that mix.
So you call this a show. Now, when you go out to RAM on Saturdays, it is a show. There's great people watching. There's usually live music. Are you going to have any performances on this virtual event?
No, that would be a great idea. But no, this event will just be to, again, get the maker's art into the view of the customers and the local community. And, of course, being that it's a Facebook event, it really opens up to customers that have been to RAM a couple months ago, and now maybe they live in other areas of the country, and if they want to purchase their favorite blackberry jam from the Riverside Arts Market, they'll be able to do that through the online show. So we're excited.
Okay, and it's important to point out too, even after you resume physical gatherings at Riverside Arts Market, you're going to continue with this online market, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Of course, this is just one of the opportunities that has developed through the pandemic. So it's just really, we've created another venue for our makers to sell their product. And I think that the vendors and the makers are still getting used to it because they think it's something that they have to actually staff the shop, if you will, during those hours. But that's not the case. You know, consumers will just be able to purchase product by hitting the comment button and marking it sold, or they would like that original print. And then as soon as possible, the artist would make that connection and get that over to them. So, you know, the potential for this to grow is incredible. We could do special events online for Mother's Day or a special event during the holiday. Because even though Riverside Arts Market under the Fuller Warren Bridge every Saturday is a wonderful event, you know, as a retail environment, we're really kind of inconvenient. We're only open one day a week and for 5 hours. So, you know, making the Facebook event has opportunities to make this just a 24/7 operation and getting the arts and the goods out there to the consumers. So the visibility is certainly will be increased.
Yeah, let's hope it has legs. And it's great because it may be some time yet, right, before you can resume the regular market. And your vendors and your artists, they really depend on that market for their livelihood.
Yeah, they really do. You know, and there's so many other aspects, of course, that RAM accomplishes under the bridge. You know, just the social interaction. And it's interesting to see some of the social interaction that is taking place through social media, where artists are asking their friends and customers, you know, their, you know, a multiple choice question on what should they be working on for their next piece of art. So we also miss that social element, and I think that's really a crucial portion of what RAM brings to the community. So we're missing that too, and we're just going to have to find new ways to incorporate that into our lives during this pandemic.
Absolutely. So, John, when do you think Riverside Arts Market might be able to start convening again? Do you have a timetable set?
You know, we, of course, have submitted a proposal to the city of Jacksonville, which includes RAM reopening in phases. As many of you know, it is a quite large parking lot. So our phase one proposal includes us opening up with 30 essential businesses. So that's our farmers, our food producers, our food trucks. And we just don't know when the city is going to allow us to happen to make, you know, RAM to have us turn the switch on again so we can be out there on Saturday. But we are ready to do that. We do know that we, you know, of course, won't be operating this Saturday, and May 23rd. Will also be closed. So with the mayor, you know, lifting the stay safer at home orders effective May 18th, I believe, you know, some things are starting to fall in place. So we're hopeful that we'll be up and running within the next 3 or 4 weeks with the essential businesses. And if we can add other makers in there and do it safely, we'd like to do so. But, you know, as any event organizer or operator, safety has always been our top priority. So if we can't do it safe, we don't want to do it. So our focus is on safety for the people we serve, and that includes the consumers and the makers.
Sure.
So we're looking forward to opening.
We are too. Looking forward to seeing everyone there. But in the meantime, as John says, just this Saturday, starting at 8 a.m., go to facebook.com/Riverside Arts Market. It's the online launch of RAM until they can meet again under the bridge. He is RAM Senior Market Manager John Silvera. Hey, John, thanks so much.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
You too. And in a moment, don't miss this, as a Jacksonville father and son talk sports. And don't let autism get in the way. That's next.
Cavendish Partners PA and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown, by appointment, and on the web at cavpartners.com. Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congareeandpenn.com for more information.
I'm Tanya Mosley. First-time homebuyer Robert Gifford bought a $300,000 house outside of Phoenix in the midst of the pandemic and then promptly lost his job.
If we get back on track, we're totally fine. But if this whole pandemic goes on for another year, like, a lot more than just me that'd be losing their house.
What's ahead for the housing market? Next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
The This year's college graduates have more on their minds than just canceled ceremonies, you know.
Now they are competing for those entry-level jobs among 30, 35 million Americans with working experience.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Happy graduation. That's next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
How well are you minding your manners? There's an army of self-righteous social vigilantes calling anyone out for falling foul of the new norms. But the lives of others do depend on how we behave in public. What are the new common courtesies, and how do we extend them without being cruel to be kind? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome to Bri the Sports Guy, an autistic young man and his dad talk sports. Bri the Sports Guy stars Brian Mountain, a 19-year-old blessed with a unique memory for sports history and statistics. Brian will provide his personal takes on the hot sports topics of the day, 3 days per week. Now let me introduce you to the host of the show, Mike Mountain.
Welcome to episode 149 of Bri the Sports Guy, an autistic young man and his dad talk sports. It's Monday morning, the 11th of May. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Terrific. I think this is about 1 month, Brian.
I think this is episode 150.
And that is Bri the Sports Guy, a podcast produced and hosted by a father and son duo right here in Jacksonville. Mike Mountain and his son Brian started this whole thing last summer after Brian graduated from high school and Mike retired from Johnson & Johnson. And as you heard there, the goal is to not only entertain the audience with some insights about sports, but also to show that autistic kids can harness their special talents because Brian has an incredible memory for sports history and statistics. I'm so excited to welcome Mike and Brian Mountain right here on my show right now. Hi, guys. Good morning.
How are you? I'm good. How are you? I'm doing really well.
So good to have you.
We're delighted to be with you, Melissa. Thanks.
It's so good to have you on the show. Brian, let's start with you. This podcast is named after you. It's Bri the Sports Guy because you know so much about sports. Why do you love sports?
The reason why I love sports is because of the competition and really, I mean, my life without sports would really just be like I couldn't listen to the news all day or I couldn't watch History Channel all day. So really sports, I've been with sports basically my whole life.
Your sports is your life. Okay. So Mike, you've raised a sports fanatic. And so how did you guys get the idea to start a podcast?
Yeah, actually, Melissa, thanks for that. So it really came twofold. One, my wife came up with the idea of, because I was looking to retire to do something with Brian. He's on the autistic spectrum, but he's very high functioning. He drives a car and he's very knowledgeable. And we wanted to harness his special facility for sports statistics and history. And I remember a couple of years ago, we were at a restaurant and we were talking sports and a guy kind of leaned over and we were talking about a variety of things. And he said to his buddies, he said, "Are you listening to this kid? How does he know all of this stuff?" So we recognized, we had just kind of come dead into it, but we recognized that he had a real special facility for it. And we've had a ton of fun over the last year. As Brian mentioned, we've done about 150 episodes, and it's really been neat to marry up his special interest and ability. He has almost a photographic memory for
wow.
Dad has to work a lot harder at getting all of the data.
That's amazing.
Brian does.
Hey, Brian, if I could ask you, I think you're on a speakerphone. If you could get off that would be good. Okay, so Brian, if I said to you, who won the 1953 World Series or something like that, you would know the answer, right?
Yep, I would.
What's the answer to that question?
The Yankees.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay, so, you know, this is so cool because your dad, setting this up, I know, is excited to talk about the fact that autistic kids can harness their special talents to really make amazing contributions to the world. And you're a good example of that, Brian.
Yep.
So tell me more about that.
Uh, To be honest with you, though, I am very fortunate. I sometimes don't even realize that I actually have I sometimes don't even think I have it, to be honest with you, because I have very, very little of it. But it is very helpful for autistic kids who have it, like, really, really bad. I'm just trying to help those. I'm just trying to make an example for those autistic kids, and I'm also trying to just connect with the audience that's watching to, like, connect with because that'll bring in more viewers, and then that they could then connect with that audience, and I want to be as unpredictable as possible. I want to be as connectful with the audience as possible, so because that'll give us dollars and that'll give us views.
Sure. By the way, people can find them online at brythesportsguy.com. And Mike, there is a big audience for this. 1 in 8 kids is on the autism spectrum. I have several relatives on the spectrum. You're on the board of the Jacksonville School for Autism. Kudos to them and all the great work they do. And, you know, this is such a great effort. I read about this in my Northwestern alumni magazine, because it turns out Mike is also a Northwestern graduate like me. And I'm always excited to meet one that's living here in Jacksonville. So what are your hopes for the future of this podcast, Mike?
Yeah, I think, Melissa, you know, we started very small. We're absolutely delighted. We have a local sponsor, a company called Rankin Hinman Manufacturing, based on Phillips Highway in St. Augustine. And the owner, Brian Hinman, is a good friend of ours. My older boy, Brian's brother, played football with Brian Hinman's son. So he's come on as a sponsor. But most of it is largely about trying, as I said, to Brian alluded to it, to try to broaden the audience as much as we can, just, again, to show, not only to share statistics and history. And as Brian mentioned, he gives his hot takes.
Yeah, hot takes.
I sort of set up the podcast, and then he gives his hot takes. So, for example, today we're going to talk about one of the divisions in the NFL. I'll go through some of the statistics and then say, okay, Brian, who's going to win that division and why?
And we're almost out of time, guys. But so I want to just say, check them out online at brythesportsguy.com. And Mike and Brian, a pleasure. Hope to meet you in person sometime. Thanks so much for being with us.
Really appreciate it. Thanks very much, Melissa.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. That's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and our podcast will be up later today at wjct.org. We'll connect with you soon. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.